Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity for us to present our work. I would like to acknowledge my co-investigator, Dr. Sharon Karp, in the back there, and also Dr. Betty Moore, who couldn't be here with us today, and all our funders, and also to extend our grateful appreciation to the women who participated in our study. This project evolved as our team was working to develop a system of care to support black women who choose to breastfeed in Middle Tennessee. But we felt this was a needed step to really better understand their perspectives and also some of the challenges that they were facing. So the purpose of this project was to learn from a sample of black women in Middle Tennessee about factors that influence and challenge women who choose to breastfeed, and then supportive strategies that impact their breastfeeding continuity in the early postpartum period. Just a few important background points and assumptions as we consider the context of black women who choose to breastfeed. We all know about the vast benefits of breastfeeding. These are very well established. And over the past few years, we've had a lot of national and local initiatives to try and increase initiation rates, and we've been somewhat successful at doing that. But although these rates have increased, we also know that up to 50% of the women who start breastfeeding actually stop breastfeeding within the first 2 weeks and very often in the first couple of days after delivery. We also know that we still have a lot of racial and ethnic differences in our initiation and duration rates. And then as a nation, we've also had a real fragmentation of implementation of policies and guidelines and recommendations from our professional and public health entities. And we have a growing body of evidence of the gaps that exist in addressing the needs and cultural nuances of individual women and their families. This slide just depicts the national goals for breastfeeding for all women, as well as the current rate of breastfeeding for all women and for women at the state level in Tennessee. And you can see we have a question mark in the 6 months exclusive for black women in Tennessee because we can't even figure out how many still breastfeed at 6 months. So Tennessee is really down there. All right, after receiving IRB approval, we recruited women from a variety of sources, including pediatric clinics, nurseries, churches, and home visitation programs. Dr. Karp and I conducted a series of 4 focus groups using a structured discussion guide. Data saturation occurred after the 3rd group. Our questions focused on several topics: people, beliefs, and traditions that influence the women in their decisions about breastfeeding, feeding and caring for their infant, their prenatal and delivery experiences, challenges to their decisions and preferences, strategies that either supported or hindered breastfeeding continuity from their personal experience, and then a wish list of available supports for black women who choose to breastfeed. Each discussion lasted about an hour and a half and was digitally audiotaped and subsequently transcribed verbatim. Recurring themes emerged from the discussion, and as we went through the discussions, we did try to reflect at the end of each group what we were picking up as themes back to the women, so giving them an opportunity even at that time to add additional information, clarify some misunderstandings, or provide additional information. We also made field notes during the discussions to capture their nonverbal expressions and behaviors, and then we debriefed with each other after each session. All the participants who completed the focus group then also received a $20 Walmart certificate. Descriptive statistics were used to summarize the data that we gathered from a brief written questionnaire that each of the women completed. And then to assure data accuracy of our qualitative data, we did do approximately 10% of checking of each of the audio tapes against the transcriptions. Our research team members used study questions and goals to guide the content analysis process to identify the common themes across and within the groups. We had 2 independent investigators who reviewed all the data line by line for patterns, recurrent words, and themes. And then each reviewer generated coding labels as potential categories. Text units were coded into relevant categories for 2 of the 4 focus groups. And then the reviewers met to discuss and compare the results and then to resolve any discrepancies. Then we reviewed the rest of the tapes, again trying to use the code scheme that we had developed, and then meeting periodically to review and refine the codes as we needed. Okay, so the results of our study. The mean age in our sample of 16 women was 31.35 years, with a mean of almost 15 years of formal education. Pregnancy experiences range from 1 participant who was actually in her first pregnancy to women who had had 7 pregnancies. 3 women were pregnant at the time of the focus group. And this was the first time pregnancy for 1 of the women, but she had planned to breastfeed her infant. The other 2 pregnant multiparous women also planned to breastfeed, but had not breastfed their prior infants. Of the remaining women, all had initiated breastfeeding with their last infant with varying levels of breastfeeding success. Reports of breastfeeding duration range from a few days to 30 months postpartum. Three mothers were breastfeeding their infants at the time of the focus groups, and their infants were 2, 5, and 8 months, respectively. We did ask on the written survey who influenced them the most about their decisions how to feed their baby. This was an open-ended question, and women had a variety of responses on the written survey. Over a third of the women identified themselves as the most influential to themselves. The next most frequently mentioned was the father of the infant or the spouse, followed by women reporting their mothers and friends. And then a cousin, a healthcare provider, and the Savior Jesus were each reported by one woman. With our qualitative data, we had four major categories that emerged. And these included balancing the influences, people, myths, and technology, being in the know, critical periods, and then supportive transitions. The first major category had three sub-themes, and I'll briefly talk about each of these. The importance of role models to women as they decided and then attempted to breastfeed was underscored by many of the women. How this took shape varied across the groups and across the women. Women consistently talked about the influence of actual people who may have been proximal, distal to, or even absent from the woman's immediate context, but nonetheless influenced them in their consideration of whether to breastfeed or not, and then subsequently as they tried to breastfeed their infants. Some women identified these people to be a close friend or a family member, like their mother or grandmother, but more often the women did not note a family member. The absence of readily available role models, particularly black role models, was noted by many of the women. Some of the women who did not have a role model actually described a process how they had very intentionally surrounded themselves during and after pregnancy with women who had children and who were actively breastfeeding or had breastfed a child. Sometimes they were women they had actually worked for or were within their social or church groups. Influential people were also supportive many of the times, but the women said they were also restrictive many times and not supportive. For example, one woman described how it was a joint decision between her and her partner that she would breastfeed their infant, but the partner determined how long she would breastfeed. The second sub-theme we labeled my personal tug of war. Overall, women described an ongoing tension between their interest, desire, and intent to breastfeed with the many myths and traditions within their own circle of family members and friends, and also within the broader cultural group of black women. Across groups, we were struck by just how consistently the women presented themselves as very confident and strong women who had actually developed a mindset that breastfeeding was the right thing to do for their infant, whether it was a term infant or a preterm infant. Their perspective and commitment were constantly bombarded by various discouragements, from family and from friends. War stories related to expected breast pain, breast problems, just how poor nutritional source breast milk really was, and so forth, started very early in their pregnancies and very often persisted through the postpartum period. And a sub-theme of the people who were sort of telling these war stories also seemed to be their concern for their role that they may be losing or changing and that they wouldn't be able to be involved with the baby as much. And so it seemed like the more they were fearful, the more war stories they told the pregnant mom or the postpartum mom. The persistent historical associations of black women as wet nurses was discussed, as were the sexual overtones that breastfeeding had for many family members and friends. This often led to the perception of the unacceptability of breastfeeding in mixed company or in public or family venues at all. The strong influence, importance, and humanization of Google as my friend emerged. When women were asked how they sought information on breastfeeding, the overwhelming and instantaneous response was, I Google it. Google was very often the primary source of information and noted by some of the women as a supportive friend. Very often they used Google versus turning to a family member, a friend, or a healthcare provider due to a prior experience of negativity about their intent or their attempts to breastfeed. They also noted it was more economical, as health providers and lactation consultants required payments. Needed information was delivered quickly, And then also they had various formats to choose. They could look at a video, they could read an article, they could be in a chat room, they could look at photos. Being in the know was also a common thread across the groups. An incidental finding related to the discussion about the internet was the discovery by these women and the importance that they placed on the use of a birth plan. Notably, the birth plans were initiated by the women, not by a healthcare provider, not in the healthcare process. Most of the women actually reported a less than favorable response from their prenatal healthcare providers and those at the time of delivery when they presented their interest or their actual birth plan. In our sample of women, technology and then this tool, the birth plan, seemed to provide women with the information and support that they needed to be in the know about breastfeeding and the birth processes. The participants across groups presented as very self-assured and confident women. But interestingly, their confidence and their perspective about being in the know didn't seem to relate to their ultimate success or non-success with their breastfeeding attempts. What seemed to be the case was the developmental progression for these women with prior pregnancies, from their first pregnancy and parental experiences to their current experiences. Some were breastfeeding their second and third child, and others had had multiple pregnancies but were breastfeeding for the first time. Women shared how their commitment to breastfeeding had grown with each subsequent pregnancy. One woman noted, "The first time around, not having the support system and trying to figure out on my own, I wasn't as successful. With each child, it," meaning breastfeeding, "has increased in time." Another said, "By the time I got to baby number three, I had a lot more people talking to me, and I even took the initiative to ask people more questions." And not unexpectedly, these three time periods emerged as critical points of time for the women. For most women, they made the decision to breastfeed in mid to late pregnancy, but none of the women identified their OB provider as having a significant role in the decision or in helping them in preparation. As their decisions were made known to family members, they reported that tensions among family members often heightened. Some women focused on the assistance, both tangible and emotional, that would be and was helpful to them, but for many, there was no real preparation after they made the decision to breastfeed. Many women describe hospital environments as supportive to breastfeeding, but within a very limited scope. There was like the only way. There was one way, it was the way, it was the right way. So they felt that their options were very limited. Contact and experience they had with nurses and lactation consultants varied widely, from very positive to very negative, and it could have been the same woman who had very positive to very negative experiences. And then for some of the younger, less experienced moms, they said that the very basics were often overlooked. One young mom noted, she, the lactation consultant, kept telling me to just open his mouth over and over, but she never told me how to do that. Whereas more experienced women described how nurses and lactation consultants would often come in and just provide rote instructions rather than determining where they were or what their individual needs were at the time. The challenges of the early days of postpartum continued as women moved into their home setting. Once breastfeeding was initiated, women reported that they also had to deal with the delicate balance of their desire to breastfeed, but also the tensions of keeping fathers, grandmothers, and other family members involved in the care of the infant. Most of the women reported fathers or partners were supportive and helpful, and yet there was also some frustration expressed by these partners as they might not have been as hands-on or as involved as they wanted to be, and sometimes their help or their support would just vanish. Some tensions emerged surrounding the lack of family acceptance or the intolerance of breastfeeding at family venues. Professional support was also an issue that they discussed, and for many there was a lot of issue because of the high cost of lactation consultation or the inconvenience of having to go to a clinic for help and then having a provider who wasn't particularly helpful. And then often those samples of formula given just in case were very tempting alternatives to continuing breastfeeding. Returning to work or school was also an issue that they brought up, and for many of the women this occurred very quickly after delivery. The most common issue during this period was the lateness of being offered breast pumps and instructions on how to use them, or for some women, the inferior quality of the breast pumps that they were provided. And again, the availability of formula and the seeming ease of formula was tempting for many. Some issues women experienced also were related to the availability and the privacy at work or school for them to be able to pump or breastfeed. But most of the women in these groups were very well aware of the laws and their rights related to breastfeeding. Our last category was creating a system of care. And the women had many ideas for creating a system of care that would support Black women who choose to breastfeed. Overall, their primary goal for women was to successfully integrate their decision to breastfeed and breastfeeding initiation into their home, family, social, and work school life. But this would require some help to have family members, friends, work environments that might be less than supportive, be willing to put aside differences, and be willing to help her achieve her goal for herself and her infant. They also said that meeting potential helpers early in the prenatal period was critical. After delivery, to meet a helper is just way too late. One woman asked, why is it not required for you to do a checkup with a lactation specialist if that's what you plan to do? The notion of a good fit between the helper and the mother and her family and timely delivery of accurate information was needed, especially as she negotiated critical periods. Individualized care versus profiling was also considered an essential to a successful partnership. Convenient options at no or low cost were also important, whether for consultants or supportive devices like pumps, and the idea of one-stop shopping for assistance emerged. When looking at helpers, or who the helper should be, for these women at least, it was much more important to them that the helper was knowledgeable and sensitive to their individual needs rather than having a professional background or racial match. As with any study, ours had strengths and limitations. We had a small volunteer sample, but the women were diverse in their pregnancy and breastfeeding experiences. They did tend to be well-educated. Similar to other qualitative studies, findings may be limited in their ability to be generalized to other groups of women. However, our in-depth examination of subtleties of our participants' experiences yielded rich data, and that will be useful to us as we move forward to develop our system of care. We also had a use of multiple analysts and member checking, which added rigor to our data analysis and interpretation. So in summary, our findings suggest that health providers had very little influence on either the decision to breastfeed or sustaining breastfeeding for this group of women. The interplay of family members, myths, traditions, and the internet was most influential in a woman's decisions related to breastfeeding, including the duration of her breastfeeding attempts. Women wanted and saw the power of being knowledgeable about breastfeeding and birth processes. And then, similar to other studies, the three critical time periods of transitions were identified. And lastly, women's expectations and desired components for a system of care were incredibly reasonable. Thank you.